Support from Orange Taxi, a new taxi company providing services to the U of I campus and the Champaign-Urbana area 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 367-8888. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Verde Gallery, featuring undiscovered tablets, paintings by Juan Yan, and ceramics by John Dodaro, also featuring Acoustic Fusion, a first and third Friday music series of live music from local musicians. Verde Gallery, a fine art gallery, cafe, and newsroom at 17 East Taylor in downtown Champaign. On the web at verdant-systems.com. Be inspired.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. On the program today, tips for getting organized, whether it's cleaning out closets, planning a party, or getting daily routines under control. Stay tuned. Help is on the way. Our guest is a professional organizer. His name is Peter Walsh, and he's one of the crew of the popular cable television show Clean Sweep on cable channel TLC. On the show, he helps people put their clutter in order in 48 hours. The clutter is serious, and I suppose one of the messages of the show is, if they can do it, so can we. The transformations are amazing, and the participants on Clean Sweep are clearly relieved to have their homes and their lives back under control. Listeners, I invite your questions for our guest, Peter Walsh. Maybe you have a tip to share. Questions, tips, share them with us. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a long-distance call, use the toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Peter Walsh is also the author of a guide to getting it together and keeping it together. It's called How to Organize Just About Everything. The book is published by the Free Press. Peter Walsh, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Celeste, after that introduction, what can I say? My gosh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's so nice to talk with you. What you do for people is really good.
You know, I'm one of the luckiest guys around, I think. I mean, I have a great job. We've just finished our 120th episode of Clean Sweep, and basically I have a fantastic team of people who work with me. And for those of your listeners who haven't seen the show, you know, as you said, we basically go into homes that are overrun with clutter and really just throw people a helping hand and help them to dig out. And it's amazingly rewarding, and the look on people's faces when they see their new spaces is pretty amazing.
Yeah. For listeners who have not seen the program, would you explain what happens in the course of the show?
Sure. As you said, it's basically 2 days, two rooms, $2,000. So we go into homes. We get around about 200 applications a day to be on the show. Those are sorted. We go into people's homes, tackle two rooms. We take everything out of two rooms and put it on their front lawn, which in itself is pretty revealing. The couple then have about half an hour to do a very quick sort on their own. Into one of three piles. They put all of their stuff into either a keep, sell, or toss pile. And generally when they're finished, they still have about 90% of their stuff left. And then I work with them for about 5 or 6 hours, and the only things that go back in the house are the things that the three of us agree to. And generally by the end of the day, that keep pile is down by at least 60%. So these are people who have serious clutter problems, and so it's a massive transformation. And while that's going on outside, the design team and the carpenter and the crew are inside redesigning the spaces. And on day two, while the couple are having a yard sale to sell the stuff they've decided to get rid of, we're reinstalling their things back in the spaces. And at the end of day two, we reveal the rooms to them.
Yeah. What's it like seeing the transformation, seeing the people so relieved to have that overwhelming mess off their backs?
You know, it's funny you use that term, because that is exactly what it's like. The thing about clutter, and I keep saying to people, the show is not really about the stuff. And, you know, people who have problems with clutter, it's very seldom about the stuff, although the stuff is what fills the spaces. But you see the transformation of the people. They go through a stage of often, you know, fighting and resistance to hold on to their stuff, and then slowly through the process we undergo with them, they start to realize that the stuff really is impeding a whole lot of things in their lives, whether it's their relationship with their partner or with their children, their ability to use the space, sometimes their career, sometimes even their spiritual self is hampered by all of this clutter. And so at the end of the 2 days, it without exception, people say this has been a life-changing experience. Mm. And that may sound a little extreme, but I really think in the overwhelming number of cases, it absolutely is.
There was a mother-daughter episode I saw recently, I want to say Friday evening.
Uh-huh.
And what was very important to these two women, family, and if I'm remembering this correctly, what they wanted to have back was dining area space.
Now, that was Lyndall and Ebony, the African-American couple here in Los Angeles. Is that correct?
The mother-daughter? Yes.
They were such an amazing couple, and actually there were 5 people who lived in that house, and it was relatively small, and Lyndall, the mother's bedroom, had just become overrun with clutter, but the space you're referring to was very much their kind of family dining room. And what had happened was they had lost the ability to gather as a family to share meals, and that was a very important thing to Lyndall, and I think important to anyone who wants to build family. And it's a great example of the way that the clutter, the mess, had just overrun the space, and it was only by really helping her let go of the stuff that it opened up the space. And that illustrates my point that it wasn't about the stuff so much as it was about the loss of their ability to grow the relationship of family within that home.
Let's talk with a listener. We've got a caller waiting for us already in Urbana on line 1. Good afternoon.
Hi.
I
had a disorienting experience just a few days ago. And one of those times when you flip through all the channels just to see what's on, I could swear I saw 3 on 3 different channels, reorganization, clean out, clean up, whatever generic you want to call the show. How many shows like yours are there now?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's probably, at the moment, I think there are about 4 shows that focus on home organization. And I think the thing for us, you know, they're all great shows. I think the thing that separates us a little bit is that we're not so much about showing people how to put photo boxes on clean bookshelves or how to put things in plastic bins to store holiday decorations. We're very much about what's happened in a family's life that's gotten them to the space where they're drowning in their clutter. And I think that's what separates us a little bit from the other shows. We're very much about, as I say, throwing people a helping hand.
Oh, it's true. With different channels having different focus, you can get a variation on the same idea. I just closed my eyes and imagined starting with the Home Shopping Network, one or another, buying the stuff, your program, finding when you keep it or not, then I switch over to the do-it-yourself show on building, as you say, shelves and storage nooks and this, and finally you get to the Antiques Roadshow, where someone has found something in the reorganization that suddenly is quite valuable and needs elucidating. It's like life.
It's kind of funny. I think, you know, I joke that, you know, I love the show I'm on, and, you know, there's so many of these, you know, home organization shows. I think the overriding thing for me, the message in all of these shows is watch a little, then get up off the couch and go and put it into action. You know, don't live your life through the TV. Don't live your life through reality TV. Live a real life. Get your homes organized. Get those things built. Get your families involved. And if that's the one message that people walk away from Clean Sweep with, then I'm pretty happy.
It's obvious that a theme has been struck that really resonates not only here but internationally. Do you know the program from the BBC?
I'm not familiar with that one.
Oh, this is the reason I called, is I'm wondering whether I saw it there first. It's always of interest to see where this gong was struck. It may resonate everywhere else, but who got this started? Like, as I was saying, the Antiques Roadshow began in the BBC, but certainly was picked up internationally.
I think the interesting thing for me is that there is a huge trend happening, particularly in the West, and I would say, you know, especially in the United States, where people have come through a period of being able to of great affluence, you know, particularly, you know, the late 90s with the whole dot-com craze, there was a lot more money. People, I think, acquired a lot of stuff thinking that more stuff gives a better life. And I think what's happening at the moment, I firmly believe that what we're seeing is a swing away from that, where people realize that to live a richer life, you actually can have less stuff, that less is more. And I think that's why we're seeing a spate of shows and, you know, initiatives around helping people get organized, because people realize that, you know, the supersize it mentality, the two for one, the you know, is not the way to go, that less is definitely more.
As a last thought, if I may, even if you get creative, even the Animal Channel has programs in which the host, in dealing with the problems of pet owners, quite explicitly says, this isn't about the problem dog. This is about the problem owner. If you can change how you relate to that pet, you can actually get what you want. If you misunderstand your relationship to the pet, you're in trouble. And if you misunderstand what these things in your house mean and which comes first, the person and its life or the things and their accumulation, it's as though on every channel you go to, the theme of understanding yourself better leads to a better relationship to whatever it is the channel focuses on. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. That's really an interesting observation.
Yeah.
I think it's a hopeful thing. We'd like to improve. We just need a little boot in the right direction.
Well, the thing is, I think everybody, Celeste, wants to live a richer life, you know, wants to live a more meaningful life. And I think that there has been a mentality that the acquisition of material things are a sign of a better, richer life. And, you know, they may be the outward manifestations of that, but they don't in themselves bring happiness. And I, in fact, see people who've acquired a ton of stuff, and exactly the opposite has happened. They're drowning, you know, that's the terminology we use. They're drowning in their stuff, and it's when you open the space that they can actually breathe, think, live, relate, love more in an open, uncluttered space that suddenly so many fantastic things happen for people. And I keep coming back to, it's not about the stuff. It's about helping people see their way through the stuff to a richer life.
We've got some other listeners waiting to talk with us. Our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine, professional organizer Peter Walsh. He's one of the crew from the TLC series Clean Sweep. He's also the author of How to Organize Just About Everything. It's published by the Free Press. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. We go next to Chicago, a listener on line four. Hi.
Hello, and welcome, Peter. I watch the show a lot, and one of the things that I have noticed is that the person in the partnership who loses it in the end, who cries, you see that there was an enormous amount of stress in that clutter, and that was the person who was bothered the most by it. And I've often felt that you've saved marriages. But I've also seen a couple of shows where it becomes very clear that some of the person's, one of the partner's behavior, either a selfishness, is really causing the clutter, and the other partner realizes it in the course of trying to clean out. And I've often wondered if that marriage ended sometime later. But whatever happens, you do see a liberation.
You know, it's very humbling going into people's lives, and people open their homes to, you know, to the whole clean sweep experience, and, you know, particularly to the work I do with them. And I learned long ago, as long as you're not judgmental and you're respectful, you can say pretty much anything to anyone. And, you know, if you've watched the show, you know that I do. And there have been a couple of fairly tense moments. But again, you know, what's most important in your life? You know, the relationship with your partner, the ability of your children to have a, you know, a clear open space to study and to learn, you know, the ability of family to gather around a table. Are those things important, or are the material things that you have accumulated more important? And, you know, sometimes you have to call people on that. You know, what is it that is fundamentally most important to you? And that can often be a little kind of a little earth-shattering for people.
Oh, I remember one show where the room that was set aside for the mother-in-law was really a mess. And I remember you saying very clearly, because the mother-in-law was taking care of the child. Right, you said to them very clearly, and they were very ashamed. I think that never occurred to them. But you asked them, what were they saying to their young child about their view, their opinion, their respect for the grandmother?
Well, it's interesting. You know, we go into homes, and that was a great example. There was a young child, and Sonny and Heman, that were the couple. I'm just trying to, after 120 episodes, sometimes it's hard to pull that out of the air, but Sonny and Heman were the name of the couple. And the mother and her mother came, you know, three times a week to look after the child and slept on a tiny kind of cot bed in a very cluttered office. And the thing is, children learn not from what we say, but from what we do. Children are not stupid. And so if you say to your kids, clean up your room, and, you know, your bedroom is a filthy mess, or, you know, the garage is overflowing, or there's not a closet that you can kind of go anywhere near without fear of being killed by falling shoes, then don't be surprised if your children don't do as you ask. And, you know, in that case, I felt that the mother-in-law was not really being treated with respect. And so suddenly, what are you saying in the nonverbal messages to your child? And again, it's not about the stuff. The stuff was representative of the problem. And the way I illustrated that with the couple was I actually put her wedding dress on the ground, you know, in its storage box, and suggested that the couple and I drive stakes through the wedding dress. And they were horrified at such a suggestion. And when I said to them, well, you wouldn't do that to your wedding dress, but it's okay for your mother to sleep in these conditions, suddenly, you know, suddenly the situation is very starkly presented. And it was very emotional for that couple. And I must tell you, I got a lot of hate mail for that little exercise.
Well, I thought that really was a statement.
Yeah.
Because I think that many times that happens in all of our lives, and we're not realizing what our clutter is saying, how we express ourselves through our stuff.
That's absolutely
towards
true.
Other people.
And I think for me, you know, those rooms are frequently a metaphor for people's lives. You know,
yeah.
If your career is stalled, if your relationship is kind of stale, you know, if your interaction with your children is just somewhat off the rocks, then look around your living space. And if, you know, clear your space, open your space, so that you can breathe, because that is the only way that you will then allow important things back into the space. And I guarantee it will a clear, open, clutter-free space will then flow into every other area of your life. I guarantee it.
I want to thank the listener in Chicago for her comments and her call this afternoon. Let's talk with another listener, a listener in Champaign, line one. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering, I'd never seen this show, but if you'd ever thought, or I read an article once that described this hoarding behavior as sort of an atavistic kind of going back to the kind of thing that squirrels do in hoarding nuts for the winter, and that some people's brains are sort of, they still have this mechanism, but it's not practical for the world as we live in it. But anyway, I was wondering then, do you ever go back and check 6 months later or a year later about this hoarding compulsion? Does it produce does what you do in 2 days produce long-term change?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I'm asked that frequently. I have two comments. The first one is the whole thing about the hoarding mentality. The worst thing I see about clutter is that it keeps people out of the present. And by that, I mean that people will say, I'm holding on to this stuff because, you know, it's a strong memory for me. I inherited this, you know. It reminds me of something that happened in the past. And so the clutter holds you either to the past or I might need this stuff sometime in the future. And so the clutter holds you at some future point. And that's the worst thing about clutter, is that you're either worrying about losing a memory or worried about something that's going to happen, so you don't live now. And clutter robs you of the now. That's one thing. The second thing is going back to homes. We have not done that on a large scale with the show, largely because, you know, it's the TLC, the company who make Clean Sweep, have not decided to do that. I have gone back to a couple of homes as part of a special program that I've done, and in both cases the changes were long-lasting, and I often hear from people who've been on the show, and the anecdotal evidence is that the change is so dramatic for these people that they have overwhelmingly embraced the change, and not only have the rooms stayed the same, but in many cases that clean sweep phenomenon has gone through the rest of their homes, in many cases through their relationships, through their careers, and they really have used this as a stepping off point to clean sweep their whole lives.
I have another question about history. My mother lived through the Depression. Do you ever come across people saying, I lived through the Depression and I don't want to throw this away because I might need it sometime?
Yeah. You know, the bottom line for me is that I don't want people getting rid of clutter and getting organized to drive people crazy. You know, and a lot of us know people or have family who have been through some trauma. And, in you know, the most extreme case is that what we call the Depression mentality. And sure, I've often seen people who hold on to everything from, you know, bottle caps and pieces of tiny aluminum foil through to, you know, newspapers. And if you can help those people to let go of that stuff, then I think it does help them enormously. But the bottom line also is, if you have an 80-year-old parent who's hoarding stuff, then you may have to make the decision to leave it be, you know, because at that stage, having been through a life where they've had such a trauma, there's little you can do. So if you can convince the person that it's going to help, then by all means, make it happen. But if it's going to end up alienating you from a loved one, then particularly, you know, an older person, then you need to be a little cautious.
Right. It's about the present and it's about relationships.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. It reminds me of a show where there was this lovely couple. They were so funny. They were so smart and they had all this stuff. And she just had so many ideas going all at the same time. She was living in the future. You know, you said to her, well, how many projects do you think you can have going at any one time? And then you asked her husband, and he said 2 or 3, and she looked like, you mean I can't?
Yeah, well, her idea is 12.
12,
okay,
yeah.
That's right. But see, that's the other thing, Celeste, that kills me, is that when we go into homes, one thing you often encounter is just the couple have never actually spoken about the clutter. They've thought about it. They've argued about it. They've manipulated each other about it, but they've never just stopped and spoken about it and the reason why they feel the need to have that much stuff and what it's doing to their relationship. And I think that's the other astounding thing for me with the show, that often you do just have to take the sting out of it by holding up a mirror. And when you hold up a mirror to people, you know, I think of one family where, you know, we worked all day, and at one stage the wife turned to me. Her brother had died tragically 7 years previously, and she had started hoarding stuff subsequent to his death. Mm. And at one stage she turned to me, and it was like the light bulb went on, and she said, oh, my God, my life stopped 7 years ago. And, you know, she had been through a trauma. Her husband had been arguing with her about all this accumulation of stuff, this couple needed an objective outside third person to hold up a mirror, and when that was done, suddenly the light went on.
Hmm. Let's talk with another listener. Line 2, a listener in Eureka. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Could you just give maybe two or three common mistakes people make in this whole process?
Yep.
I guess you've been kind of discussing it.
I think one of the biggest problems I see, I must say that I love the fact that you're from Eureka, not because of the whole Archimedes thing, but Eureka is one of the major goldfield battles in Australia.
Oh, I see. Okay. I have found it.
Let's hear it for Eureka.
Yes, thank you.
I think that one of the biggest problems I see is that when people start organizing, they will rush out and buy, you know, plastic bins or boxes or, you know, the organizing things. The first thing you have to do when you start to get organized is to purge the stuff you no longer need. I mean, clothes are a great example. We wear 20% of our clothes 80% of the time. So if, for example, you're going to organize your closet, don't go out buying new hangers. Don't go out buying, you know, boxes to put your winter stuff away in. Don't go out buying shoe racks. Get rid of the stuff you don't wear because, you know, 8 times out of 10, what you'll discover is that you have enough space. It's not a problem of space. It's a problem of too much stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's the biggest problem I see first, that people don't purge first. The second problem that I see, and it's kind of related to that, is that people find the concept of decluttering overwhelming. You know, they open the garage, oh my God, I can't do it. They'll walk into their bedroom and say there's too much stuff. Start small. Start small. Just one flat surface, one countertop, one bedside table, you know, one medicine chest. Start small. And the small increments will start, you know, with kind of bigger long-term results. So purge first and start small. They're my two biggest tips.
Well, that would be like saying dividing a big job into smaller units.
Yep.
And maybe give yourself, I found this always to be very helpful, give yourself a very specific time limit.
Absolutely.
I'm going to do 2 hours on this and maybe stop and do something else, but that seems to make it more doable.
My grandma was a really smart woman. She used to say, the only way to eat an elephant is one mouthful at a time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Peter Walsh, our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. He's a professional organizer. He's one of the crew of the TLC series Clean Sweep. And we've had a listener call in and want to know, when is the program on? And Central Time, it's on weekdays at 9 a.m. and 5 p.m., and then on Friday evening, it's on at 7 p.m. Central Time. And I think also through the weekend, doesn't it kind of roll over late at night?
Yeah, it's on a couple of times a day, and I'm not sure what time it's on Central, but certainly the Friday night episode is a new episode every week. And then there are repeat episodes twice a day. That's correct.
Okay. Well, Friday night, our time, it's 7 p.m. Central Time because I went to the TLC website.
Yep. Thank you.
And weekdays, 9 a.m. Central Time and 5 p.m. Central Time. Now let's talk with our next listener, caller in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi there.
I'm the one who wanted to know when and where to find the show.
Okay.
And is TLC a channel?
Yes, the Learning Channel, TLC.
The Learning Channel.
Yes,
I'm fairly new to Champaign, so I haven't discovered it yet, but I'll find it.
It's definitely out there, I guarantee it.
And I'll ask you, while I have your attention, all of this advice is excellent, and I just happen to be in the middle of trying to clean out a closet and give away, now I think, maybe 60% of what's in there. But you describe the procedure you go through of putting everything out in the front yard and
yes.
deciding what to have a garage sale mm-hmm. for. Well, how about someone who lives in a one-bedroom apartment, has
yep.
no front yard,
mm-hmm.
That doesn't belong to the whole complex, and I think you just gave some very good advice to start small.
Yep. Here's a couple of things with your closets and, you know, or books or shoes. One thing I call the ratio rule.
Uh-huh.
Go to the closet. For every four items that you keep, for every four pair of shoes, four items of clothing, four books, for every four that you keep, get rid of one. Give it away to Goodwill or throw it away. or and then try to get to 3-to-1. For every 3 that you keep, get rid of 1. If you go through your books, your shoes, your clothes in that way, you'll straight away cut down the volume by a third or a quarter. And you don't have to lift everything out to do that. Just start at one end of the closet. Another really good trick with clothes, which is terrifying, is turn your coat hangers back to front. I know it sounds a little strange. Turn all the coat hangers around back to front. Every time you wear an item of clothing and hang it back up, hang it up with the coat hanger the correct way. In 6 months, you will see what clothes you have worn and what clothes you have not, and you should seriously consider the coat hangers that are still around the reverse way, seriously consider whether you need those clothes. Because as I said before, you wear 20% of your clothes, you wear 20% of your shoes 80% of the time.
And the books are a big problem, but I'll solve it. I've got to know, have one more question.
Sure.
Are you from Australia or Australia? Yeah. Or New Zealand?
I jokingly say I'm from Alabama with this accent, but you nailed it. It's Australia.
Not from Alabama.
Yeah, Australia. I've been here about 10 years now, and I just can't shake this accent to save my life.
Don't shake it. I lived in Australia 5 years, and it just sounds like home.
So much.
Well, thank you very much for your advice.
You have a wonderful day.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Other calls are invited. We have a few minutes left in this portion of the program, about 10, 15 minutes left in this portion of the program. Our guest this afternoon, Peter Walsh. He's a professional organizer, author of How to Organize Just About Everything. He's one of the people on the hit series Clean Sweep, which is on the cable channel TLC, the Learning Channel. Peter describes himself as part contractor, part therapist, and this afternoon we're talking about getting it together and keeping it together. And speaking of Australia, Peter, your biographical sketch says that you divide your time between Los Angeles and Australia. Does that help keep you organized, or does that lead to organizational challenges, even for a pro?
Celeste, you're going to hang me out to dry here. I can feel it. I tend to be one of those guys who, if I haven't used something in 6 months, I tend to get rid of it. You know, it just drives me nuts to be surrounded with too much stuff. And, the traveling back and forth does help enormously to kind of keep things to a minimum. My life now, though, is very firmly rooted in Los Angeles. I've been here about 10 years now, and I do try to get back to Australia a couple of times a year. I'm one of 7 children, and if I don't get back at least a couple of times a year, even at my age, my mother gets on my case very seriously.
And I'm sure your brothers and sisters, or your sisters and brother, or whatever you've got in the way of siblings, want to see you.
3 of each. Yep.
Yeah.
In my family, it's if anything keeps me grounded in this world, it's my brothers and sisters. I mean, family is very important, and in my case, they let me know that professional organizer or not, that I'm still just, in the case of my older sisters particularly, I'm just their little brother, and don't forget it.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Champaign, line 1. Hi.
Hi. I have not found your program, but I will look for it now at 9 o'clock in the morning. It looks like I need a lot of catching up. My problem is not so much things as it is paper.
Yep.
What do I do? Mm. I'm forever saving, here's a good cause I might be able to give to, or maybe I should read this later.
I hear you.
So my dining room table is covered with that stuff.
Okay, now when you say paper, a couple of quick questions. Are we talking things like magazines, bills, receipts? Be a little more specific for me very quickly.
Okay. I do have magazines piled, but they are not on my dining room table. It's more like information that comes in the mail. I throw out a lot that comes in, but it's information like, I should read this, or here's a lot of it is donations. I don't know. It just seems to pile up. Every time the mailman comes, he dumps me with 10 or 15 things.
Okay, here's the deal. What you should do is get one little tray, tray, and that's the stuff where your reading material goes in. If you haven't read that within a week, get two of them. Get two, side by side.
Uh-huh.
Week one, put the stuff you're going to read. At the end of week one, when week two starts, start on the second tray.
Okay.
At the end of the second week, the first tray gets thrown out.
Okay.
Throw it away, because the fact is, if you haven't read it in 2 weeks, you're not going to read it.
Okay.
And if your dining room table is covered in stuff, my question is, what's important? Like, you know, something that might be in that paperwork, or having a clear, open, uncluttered space. Be tough, because paper is like, particularly, you know, the paperwork that comes in the mail is like, you need to treat it like an intruder. Don't let it in the house, or if you do, get it out as quickly as you can.
Okay, okay.
Sorry for the tough line, but that's the only thing you can do. Two trays.
Uh-huh.
2 weeks. At the end of the second week, the first week goes.
Okay, I got wrote it down.
Okay.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck.
Good luck. Next, we talk with a listener in Urbana on line two. Hi.
Good afternoon. I wholeheartedly agree with you. However, my sister, one of my dearest friends, are obsessive compulsives,
yep.
And the way that it shows is being a hoarder.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that there's really, you know, that's one of the cases of, you know, don't shoot the relationship,
yeah.
Because it really is a medical condition that,
yeah.
You know, people who are obsessive compulsive have, you know, various symptoms. But if it's a hoarding symptom, then that's pretty solid.
Yeah, you know, the thing with the show and the thing generally with clutter is that you might have, for example, a young mother who's just, you know, just had a new child, and the clutter has just overrun the house. And that's, you know, it's just kind of what I would call situational. And in other cases, there are pathologies involved. And often I keep saying it's not about the stuff. You need to ask, what is it about? And if it's symptomatic of a pathology, of a medical condition, then going in and pulling all the stuff out of the house, or going in and forcing the person to downsize, is actually going to exacerbate the situation, mm-hmm. rather than solve it. And again, I keep saying I don't want people to go crazy about getting organized, and you need to look at each individual situation. If there's a medical condition, then that situation needs to be dealt with trained, you know, professionals,
right.
Whether psychologists, psychiatrists, or, you know, a primary care doctor who can give some help to that person, because the clutter is a symptom, you know, and it's not
right.
The cause.
Right.
And, you know, I keep going back to that. You are absolutely right.
Well, I can't agree with you more, and luckily my own symptoms don't fall into hoarding. So I definitely take everything that you said and try to do it.
Well, thank you so much. And just the one thing, you know, with your sister, you know, the best thing you can do in that situation with a family member or a friend who's a compulsive hoarder is to keep the lines of discussion,
mm-hmm.
support, you know, open with that person, so that they know that you're a rock for them. And in that way, you can often make little victories in terms of helping them overcome their situation and, you know, dealing with not only the clutter, but with probably other, you know, symptoms in their lives. So, you know, never shut the door.
Okay, I believe it is the Obsessive Compulsive Foundation, which is based in Connecticut, which has some online information about hoarders. And
that's,
I think that is
the case, yes.
Pardon me?
I believe that's true, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, if somebody feels that theirs is a pathological situation and not just an acculturated one,
yeah, yeah.
That's a good place to go. And also, they have some helpful tips for people there also.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. I was wondering, do you have a book out?
Yes, actually, I've just released a book called How to Organize Just About Everything. And if you go to Amazon.com, you can certainly get it there, or through pretty much any major bookstore. Or if you go to my website, which is peterwalshdesign.com, there's also information there about the book and generally about cluttering and about clean sweep. But How to Organize Just About Everything, check it out.
Okay, great. Thank you. My pleasure.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Peter Walsh, our guest this afternoon on the program, author of How to Organize Just About Everything, professional organizer. You can see him on the TLC cable series Clean Sweep. In this book, How to Organize Just About Everything, this guide includes tips for organizing and carrying through on dreams. Train for a major athletic event, learn to fly, become an astronaut. Now,
how to organize the takeover of a small third world country.
Now,
there's a lot of great stuff in there. A lot of it's just a little tongue-in-cheek. I don't want people to go nuts. My favorite one actually is tip number 501, which is how to organize to be happy. And so, you know, all this is for naught if at the end of the day, you know, we don't live a richer life that really, you know, focuses on the things that are important. But, there's 501 different tips and, as I say, just about everything.
Yeah, but you know what? It seems to me that sort of keeping one's dreams, you know, keeping them in mind isn't a bad idea.
You know, it's so funny, you know, when I go into people's homes and I talk to people about, you know, the clutter and their lack of organization, one of the first questions I ask people is, what kind of life do you want to live? You know, and it's a great question, you know, even for people listening, just to stop and ask themselves, what life do I want to live? What's the dream for my life? Because, you know, we're all so busy. There's so much happening. We're so assailed by, you know, things large and small in the media that we somehow lose track of that. And the only person who's going to make that dream happen, live that kind of life, is you. And overwhelmingly, I see things getting in the way, you know, things broadly defined getting in the way of people's lives. And, you know, you need to you know, jot down what those dreams are, jot down what kind of life you want to live, and then decide how you're going to realize that, how you're going to make that happen. And if material things are a part of that, good for you. But if the material things in your life are getting in the way, then you need to organize to get rid of those.
One of the organizational devices you include early in the going, it's number 3. How to organize just about everything. That's the title of the book. Number 3 is write an effective to-do list. To wrap up here this afternoon, this might be some really good basic information. What should we think about when we sit down to make that list?
Well, the first thing you need to do is to go through your purse, go through your desk, go through your pockets, go through, like, all those little ideas, scraps of paper, all those different ideas you have written on backs of envelopes or napkins or whatever all over the house, bring them all together into one place, you know, and basically consolidate all that stuff into one list. And, you know, that will then highlight for you everything from the mundane, pick up the dry cleaning, through to, you know, the big things, you know, world peace, help organize world peace. And then categorize all of those to-dos and start working through those lists in a logical, sequential way. You know, get, for example, a little electronic organizer that will help you keep all those things together. Get a weekly calendar that you can put a to-do list on. But again, keep them all in one place, and so that at the end of the day, at the end of the week, you can start crossing things off, because an effective to-do list is the first step in getting to the life you want to live.
Yeah. Number 6 on this write an effective to-do list is a really nice idea, and it is post a list with projects that take 5 minutes or less.
Yeah.
What a great idea. Because it gets back to that what's manageable idea.
Yeah. But, you know, we have those moments every day where they're just kind of lost, you know, lost minutes. And the other great thing about, you know, things that can be done in less than 5 minutes, post that list somewhere publicly so that you're not the only person who's, you know, who's taking care of all of those to-do things in your life. If you have kids, you know, your husband, your partner, you know, whatever, get them on board as well so that everyone is kind of facing in the same direction in making, you know, getting things done within, for example, your own household. So, and the 5 minute or less things are big because, again, the only way to eat an elephant, one mouthful at a time, knock off all of those small things as quickly and efficiently as you can.
Yeah. And it feels good to take a nice big fat crayon and draw it through those.
See,
draw it through those.
You're on board already,
things. Yeah, well, I need some help, but I'm on my way.
Good.
I want to thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
It's been totally fun and my pleasure. And thanks to you and such, you know, wonderful listeners. They've been great to chat with. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, all our best to your crew, too.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Peter Walsh has been our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. He's a professional organizer. He's the author of How to Organize Just About Everything. The book is published by the Free Press. You can find him on the TV, the cable TV series, Clean Sweep. It's on TLC, the Learning Channel, weekdays 9 a.m. Central, 5 p.m. Central, and Friday night at 7 p.m. Central Time. That's the new episode every week. 8 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time, settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thanks much, Celeste. From the Board of Trade this afternoon, futures in the bean pit finished the day higher, anywhere between 3 and 6 cents higher, but that was backed off just a bit on their day's high, up around $5.25 a bushel in the March contract, and they finished a nickel below that at $5.20 for a 3 cent and a quarter gain for the day. So we'll take a complete look at those numbers here in just a bit, and then we'll discuss just exactly why they backed off at the end of the day when we talk a little bit later during the closing market report at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock today with our analyst. Be sure to stay with us for that. March wheat from the Chicago Board of Trade on this afternoon at high at 299 for a Monday, a low at 293 and three quarters, a settlement price at 295 and a quarter, and they were off a half cent. May futures, a 306 high, low at 301 and a quarter, settlement price there, 302 and three quarters, unchanged for the day. July futures, this is your harvest month, 313 the high. Low at 309, settlement price at 309 and three quarters. That finished the day unchanged as well. September futures down a half, 318 and a half, the high, the low at 314 and a half, and the September wheat settled at 315. Once again, it was off a half cent. December contract down a quarter, 323 and three quarters, the settlement price there. March corn for the day, $1.99 and three quarters, the high, the low at 197 and a quarter, settled at 197 and three quarters, up three quarters. The May futures at 206 and a half high, low at 204 and three quarters, settlement price at 205 and a quarter. They were a penny higher. And July futures, 213 and a half, the high, the low at 211 and three quarters, settlement price 212 and 212 even, that is, and they were up three quarters of a percent. Once again, that for the July contract. September futures, 220 and three quarters, the high, low at 219 and three quarters, settlement price $2.19 and three quarters, up a penny for the day for the September contract. December futures, now your new crop, 230 and a half the high, the low at 228 and three quarters, settlement price at 229, and they were up a half of the day. And the March contract at 237 and three quarters high, low at 236 and a quarter, settled at 236 and a half, and they were up a half of the day. March oats for the day, 171 and a half the high, the low at 165 and three quarters, and the March oats settled at $1.69. They were down a penny. May futures, $1.57 and a half the high, the low at 155 and a half, settled 157. They finished the day a quarter cent higher. From the soy complex, now the beans, a $5.25 high on a pretty good rally in the beans throughout a good portion of the day, fell back towards the end of the day with a low at 519 and a half and a settlement price at $5.20. They still settled three and a quarter higher. The May contract, a 524 and a half high, low at 520. Settlement price at $5.20 and a quarter, up four and a quarter for the day. July futures, 529 and a half the high, the low at 525. Settlement price at 525 and a half, up four and three quarters. And the August soybeans, $5.32 the high, the low at 528 and a half. Settlement price at 528 and a half, and they were up 5.5 cents. September futures, 534 and a half the high, the low at $5.29. Settled 529 and a half, they were up 5.5, and November's were up 5.75, 542 and a half, the high, the low at $5.38, settled 538 and a half, up 5.75 for the November contract. January of next year, 545, the high, the low, and the settlement price for the January contract, all at $5.45 for 2006, and they were up 6 cents. Bean meal now, 158 for the nearby March contract on the high, the low at $1.50, or rather $155.80, settled $155.90. They were up a dime. and July bean meal up 70 cents today. 157 the high, the low at 155.80, settled at 155.90, up 70 for the May bean meal. Bean oil futures, 1997 the high, the low at 1970, settled $19.74. They were up 16, and the May bean oil up 18 cents, settled at $19.87, with a high of 20.07 and a low at 19.84. Now here's Celeste Quinn with the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange.
And livestock prices were lower today on the Merc. January feeder cattle 105.35, the high 104.47 and a half, the low 104.55, the settlement, that down 117 and a half. March 101 even, the high 99.30, the low 99.60, the settlement, that down 165. April feeders, $100, 2.5 cents, the high 98.70, the low, finishing at 99, even down 152.5. February live cattle, 88.90, the high 88.15, the low 88.70, the settlement, that down 57.5. April live cattle, 87.52.5, the high 86.55, the low, the settlement 86.95, that down 95. February lean hog, 75.50, the high 74.85, the low 75.42.5, the settlement, that down 45. April 76.40, the high 75.60, the low 76.30, the settlement, that down 30. May 76.40, the high 75.80, the low 76.30, the settlement, that down 52.5. June lean hogs 78.40, the high, the low 77.60, the settlement 78.35, that down 60. February bellies 94.10, the high 93.10, the low 93.67.5, the settlement, that down 42.5. The Dow is up 3 points at 10,396. The NASDAQ off 17 at 2017. And the S&P 500 off 1 point at 1167.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is proud to underwrite agricultural programming on WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Ed Schoenfeld from Douglas, Alaska writes, Dear Dr. Science, if global warming melts all the glaciers and ice fields and floods coastal communities up to their eyeballs, will New York, New York still be the city so nice you have to say it twice?
When that happens, New York will even be a nicer place than it is now. Global warming will send a wave of warm water to wash away all the grime, filth, and mean-spiritedness that has plagued the Big Apple since the days of Boss Tweed. Imagine having a total stranger slosh through a pool of brackish brine just to give you a hug. When that happens, you'll be saying New York 3, maybe 4 times before you hold your breath and dive down to catch the A train.
Thank you, Dr. Science. Send your science questions to Ask Dr. Science. Remember, he's not a real doctor.
I have a master's degree
in science.
Produced by